Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Global Citizen International Digest. I'm Mel Gertov, and I'll be reporting and commenting on the most important and sometimes the most neglected international news of the past week or so. Here are some of the news items I'll be covering. Three questionable U.S. decisions relevant to the Gaza war, how Americans view the war in Israel, and U.S.-China military talks are back on track. First, the Biden administration has made three decisions in the last few weeks that do a disservice to American foreign policy and values. First, the U.S. stood alone in voting against a United Nations Security Council resolution to recognize Palestinian statehood, another gesture to Israel. The Palestinian request was supported by 12 Security Council representatives, with two, the United Kingdom and Switzerland, abstaining. Unanimity is required for the resolution to pass. It would then have gone to the General Assembly, where a two-thirds vote would approve full Palestinian representation. The U.S. argument for vetoing the resolution was that it, quote, strongly supports a two-state solution. It will only come from direct negotiations between the parties. Second, the administration decided to sanction one Israeli Defense Forces unit, composed of ultra-Orthodox soldiers, for its abuses in the West Bank. Israel called the move absurd, and in some ways it is. The U.S. is not sanctioning military aid to any IDF unit involved in human rights violations in the Gaza Strip. To the contrary, the latest tranche of U.S. military aid to Israel is unconditional. Secretary of State Blinken addressed the aid in a comment that is clearly untrue for both this and all preceding U.S. administrations. Quote, as we're looking at human rights and the condition of human rights around the world, we apply the same standard to everyone. That doesn't change whether the country in question is an adversary or a competitor, a friend or an ally, unquote. He also said we can count on Israel to investigate its own violations, saying, quote, this is what separates democracies from other countries, the ability, the willingness, the determination to look at themselves, he said. Evidently not in Gaza, as the State Department's own report has just indicated. Israeli authorities operating in Gaza had taken, quote, no publicly visible steps to identify and punish officials implicated in alleged violations there. Those violations include the particularly horrific finding in Gaza of mass graves of Palestinians discovered following the departure of Israeli troops from the Al-Shifa and Nasser hospitals. The bodies show evidence of torture. The UN will be investigating. The violations also include the near-total destruction of Gaza. The Guardian reports this comment by an expert on post-war reconstruction. Quote, based on the current amount of debris in Gaza with 100 trucks, we are talking about 14 years of work to remove it. That's just up till now. It gets worse every day there isn't a ceasefire. Unquote. Third, the administration let stand removal of financial support of the UN Relief Agency for Palestine, known as the United Nations Relief and Works Agency, from the latest U.S. humanitarian aid bill for the Palestinians. The U.S. has been the major contributor to the UNRWA, as it's called. Israel contends that thousands of the agency's workers have ties to Hamas or other terrorist groups. But an independent review of the UNRWA, which provides aid and social services to about 5 million people throughout the Middle East, finds that, quote, in the absence of a political solution between Israel and the Palestinians, UNRWA remains pivotal in providing life-saving humanitarian aid and essential social services, particularly in health and education, to Palestinian refugees in Gaza, Jordan, Lebanon, Syria, and the West Bank, unquote. UNRWA does need reforms, the report says, but it has, quote, established and updated a significant number of policies, mechanisms, and procedures to uphold neutrality. The UN has suspended its investigation of Israel's charge. The investigation cleared three of the 12 UNRWA workers who were fired for lack of evidence. The others remain under investigation. By the way, some good news on humanitarian relief. World Central Kitchen has resumed serving meals in Gaza. How Americans view the war in Israel. Philip Bump of The Washington Post reports on the latest polls with these findings. First, half of respondents said they supported Israel's response to the Hamas attack 5 months ago. Now, fewer than 4 in 10 do. That support is heavily concentrated among Republicans. Second, about two-thirds of Americans say they support a ceasefire, at least somewhat, and just under half of them strongly support one. More than three-quarters of Democrats say they support a ceasefire at least somewhat. So does a majority of Republicans. Third, on military aid to Israel versus humanitarian aid to Palestinians, Democrats and independents want to decrease the former and increase the latter. Republicans want the reverse. And lastly, just before Iran attacked Israel, all groups strongly supported the U.S. in helping Israel defend itself. Needless to say, these polls do not reflect the ongoing campus protests. U.S.-China military talks are back on track. Four meetings between the two countries' militaries have now taken place since the Biden-Xi summit last November. Two of them occurred in April. One is the Military Maritime Consultative Agreement Working Group, which resumed in Honolulu after a three-year hiatus. The subject was operational air and naval safety, avoidance of the kinds of near misses that are occurring with greater frequency. 180 incidents, according to U.S. sources, especially in the South China Sea area. Open, direct, and clear communications with the People's Liberation Army and with all other military forces in the region is of utmost importance to avoid accidents and miscommunication, said the head of the U.S. delegation. The second April meeting occurred on the 16th. Secretary of Defense Lloyd Austin spoke with China's new defense minister, Admiral Dong Jun, the first such conversation since November 2022. The working group talks have apparently had some effect. According to one U.S. military spokesman, quote, "We've observed a reduction in unsafe behavior between us and People's Liberation Army aircraft and vessels over the last several months. So we're encouraged by that." Though he also said dangerous and unlawful Chinese acts are occurring against the Philippines. In other news, also from China, Secretary Blinken was in Beijing. He spent 3 days there, meeting with President Xi Jinping and Foreign Minister Wang Yi, among others. Once again, the Chinese assessed the U.S.-China relationship as having stabilized, but also as having left China dissatisfied with certain U.S. policies, notably on high-tech export controls, regional security arrangements that target China and Taiwan. And once again, both Xi and Wang called upon the U.S. to be partners rather than rivals, jointly cooperate on international projects, and match words with deeds. Nevertheless, the two sides agreed to continue and expand consultations on these and other matters, including visa problems for Chinese visitors to the U.S., artificial intelligence, and drug control, particularly on fentanyl. Next, Germany's wobbly dance with Beijing. The German government has a China problem. How to sustain a very large commercial relationship while remaining true to so-called European values, starting with respect for human rights and adherence to the UN Charter. The one competes with and often undermines the other. When Germany's Chancellor Olaf Scholz took office in 2021, he vowed to move Germany away from economic dependence on China. Last year, Scholz described China as a, quote, partner, competitor, and systemic rival. But now, as the New York Times reports, quote, talk of scaling back reliance on China has been replaced with calls for equal access to China's market for foreign firms. This shift is apparent from Scholz's recently completed three-day visit to China. He was accompanied by corporate leaders rather than foreign policy officials critical of China, demonstrating that Germany's economic interests are winning the competition over values and strategic priorities. China and Germany are major investors in each other's economy. Germany relies heavily on China as an export market, especially for high-end autos and electronics, and many German jobs depend on the China trade. German automakers worry about China's flooding of the electric vehicle market in Europe and about unfair competition in China, but that isn't keeping them from doing business with only passing reference to repression in China or to China's support of Russia in the Ukraine war. Banning nuclear weapons in space. A U.S.-Japan resolution put before the U.N. Security Council would ban nuclear weapons in space, strengthening the 1967 Outer Space Treaty that both the U.S. and Russia signed. But now Russia has vetoed that resolution, instead urging that all weapons be banned from space. The U.S. position, articulated by National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan, is that Russia, quote, is developing a new satellite carrying a nuclear device. We have heard President Putin say publicly that Russia has no intention of deploying nuclear weapons in space. If that were the case, Russia would not have vetoed this resolution, unquote. In a separate statement, Sullivan underscored the specific dangers posed by a nuclear weapon in space. Quote, placement by a state party of a nuclear weapon in orbit would not only violate the Outer Space Treaty, but would threaten the vital communications, scientific, meteorological, agricultural, commercial, and national security services that any and all satellites provide to societies around the globe, unquote. Yet Sullivan never did explain why the U.S. refused to endorse Russia's stance on banning all space-based weapons. Stopping the boats from reaching Britain. Britain's Prime Minister Rishi Sunak wants to be the one who, quote, stops the boats from bringing refugees from Rwanda. His government has appealed to several African nations to take these asylum seekers, but so far without success. So he's intent on sending the refugees back by commercial airlines and only needs Parliament's approval to do so. The move is clearly driven by politics. Sunak's Conservative Party is trailing Labour badly in polls, and stop the boats has become a key appeal. Never mind that in past years, when British governments tried to send people back to Rwanda, both British courts and the European Court of Human Rights ruled against them. To counter the critics, Sunak's administration drew up a Safety in Rwanda law that declares Rwanda safe for the refugees' return. But a UN agency has recently questioned that claim and warned airlines that they, quote, could be complicit in violating internationally protected human rights and court orders by facilitating removals to Rwanda. Since Britain is not a member of the European Union, it cannot follow the policy set by the right-wing Italian government of Giorgia Meloni, who, with the EU's support, has negotiated with autocratic North African countries, Egypt and Tunisia so far, to curb migration. The essence of the deal struck by the EU is development assistance in return for keeping people from migrating to Europe. Supposedly, a new EU-Africa partnership that the EU Commission President, Ursula von der Leyen, says brings European and African interests together as never before. Finally, a few updates of previous stories. Score another win in Africa for Russia. Last week, I reported on Niger's decision to remove U.S. forces from its country, as Russian military advisors moved in. Now the government of Chad has also ordered 75 special operations forces to leave. This comes a year after the U.S. warned the Chad government about a Russian plot to kill him and three top aides. Evidently, the Chad government was unconvinced. And next, another UN deployment in Africa. Haiti's Prime Minister Ariel Henry has finally resigned, making new elections possible in a country besieged by gangs and on the brink of total chaos. The hope is that a new government with a new president, the previous one was assassinated in 2021, will agree to deployment of a UN peacekeeping force and be able to impose order. But that depends on the new government's gaining acceptance from gangs and paramilitary groups that control 80% of the capital, as well as key places such as the airport, fuel centers, and medical facilities. Those groups are responsible for many civilian casualties. Will they ever be prosecuted? On Monday, CNN carried an exclusive interview with one gang leader who acknowledges the kidnappings, rapes, and robberies his forces have committed, as well as his gang's assaults on the police. Hard to imagine he and his gang will ever be brought under control. That's the Global Citizen International Digest for the week. I'm Mel Gertov. Thanks for listening, and take good care.